My guess is that most of us at one time or another have been asked to attend a day-long seminar of some sort, perhaps related to our job. Maybe it's related to one of our avocations or our life in church. You know, one of those day-long seminars where you're asked to go and listen to an experienced professional consultant who supposedly knows everything there is to know about what you're engaged in. And often you can go and listen to someone who tells you pretty much everything that you already know without making any reference to the particular context or circumstances with which you're familiar. Well, several of us, Alice and Maureen and I, yesterday went to a day-long seminar at the cathedral called Real Church, Real Mission. It was a diocesan-sponsored day to ask us to look at how it is that we can be church in the 21st century. And I must confess, I went with some trepidation, but I at least felt like I came away with a number of insights, and the main speaker actually was someone local, so I had a sense she knows something about what it means to lead a church in the Boston area. Her name was the Reverend Molly Finney Basket, and she has just finished up 12 years as the lead pastor of First United Church of Christ in Somerville. It's a congregation that's grown from about an average Sunday attendance of 40 to about 150. About 25% of their congregation is under the age of 30. And something's clearly happening there. And she talked about a number of the things that they do. And one of the things she talked about was how they have woven into their liturgy and their common life testimony. That is the ability for members of the church to bear witness to how God is at work in their lives, changing, healing, bringing growth. Their corporate prayer of confession each Sunday actually includes someone leading, in some ways, an individual confession about what's going on in his or her own life. Now, don't get nervous. We're not going to introduce that today. There's not going to be an altar call after the sermon. But listening to her did remind me of an earlier church I served where we experimented with something like that. We called it the Invitation to Christian Discipleship. And after the sermon was done, we all sat for a minute or two or three. And a little bit like Quaker meeting, if someone felt moved to stand up and come forward and say something in response to the sermon, perhaps a call to ministry or how God was moving in their life, they were invited to do so. Once in a while, someone was moved to just start singing a hymn from where they were sitting, and everyone joined in. Other times, I found myself murmuring under my breath, "What have we done?" Because you give up a little control. But then came the Sunday when Keys came forward to speak. Keys was a man in his mid-50s at the time. He taught German at a local high school, but he was Dutch, actually, and he had grown up in the Netherlands. And he was moved to come forward that day because the Sunday was close to the 50th anniversary of the D-Day invasions, and I had made reference to that momentous event in my sermon. And so he came forward, and he felt compelled to share with us a little bit about his life growing up as a very young child in occupied Holland. He and his older brother lived with their parents in Amsterdam, and shortly after the war began, like other children and in other countries, they were sent out to the countryside to live, where it was considered to be safer. He and his brother were resettled with a family they didn't know. I'm not sure if his parents in Amsterdam were even able to ever come and visit. I can't recall that part of the story, but for the duration of the war, basically, he and his older brother were separated. He was about 3 years old at the time he was taken away. Then Case talked about the time when D-Day came and in the weeks and after that invasion and the excitement and anticipation, but also the anxiety as the Allied forces were going to make their way to the east. I forget what the date was, what the time was, how long that took. But even as a seven-year-old, by that time, he had some sense that things were changing, and he and his brother grew more and more anxious about their fate there on that farm. And finally, in desperation and in loneliness, his older brother decided they were going to make their way back to Amsterdam. They took several days to prepare for their journey. They secretly would store food from the noontime meal to take with them, packed a few extra clothes, and then one night, in the middle of the night, without letting their farm family know, they set off on their way. Not even really sure how it was they were going to get back to Amsterdam. But they went to the nearest road and proceeded, thinking they'd be on a deserted farm road. But with the approach of the Allies, things indeed were happening. German trucks, German soldiers were coming by, and every time they saw something coming along the road, they would hide down in a ditch. They'd go back to start again, hide down in a ditch, until finally exhausted, they decided to stay in one place for the remainder of the night and set out again in the morning. In some ways, realizing they had probably made a terrible mistake, they were yet determined to get home. And early the next morning, just as the sun was rising, they came up out of that ditch to start on their way, and suddenly, even as they started, they saw again someone coming from the distance, a man riding a bicycle. And they got back down and waited and peered over the edge of the ditch. Was it a Dutch person? Was it a German? And he got closer and closer, and then they saw. It was their father. It was their father who had been riding a bicycle all through the night from Amsterdam, who in his own anxiety, in his own sense of desperation, had decided he needed to find his children and bring them home. Today is the fourth Sunday in Lent. It's traditionally called Rose Sunday or Refreshment Sunday, and we are invited on this Sunday to consider joy. Now, we know that joy is not one of those emotions that you manufacture or you produce on command. I can say to you, be joyful. But if you have nothing to be joyful for today, I cannot force that. But when we see it, when we experience it or behold it in another, we know how profound an emotion that is. Can you imagine the joy of Kees and his brother when they recognized their father? Can you imagine the joy in that father's heart when he beheld his two young boys there at the side of the road? That's what Jesus invites us to imagine, because Jesus tells us a story today about that kind of joy. About the joy of a father who has two sons, and yes, of course, the younger one demands his inheritance, goes off to a distant country, and there squanders it all in dissolute living. I love that phrase, dissolute living. It's not because I'm all that familiar with it, but on he went, spending all he had, and there in the midst of a famine, standing in the midst of a pigsty, envying the very food that the pigs are eating, we are told that he came to himself and he decided in his desperation to return home. He would seek a servant's place in the household of his father, whom he had disgraced. But of course, before he could reach home, something happened. While he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around his child, and he kissed him. And then this, bring out a robe, the very best one. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Get the fatted calf and slay it, because we must celebrate. We must celebrate. Here is the heart of a parent rejoicing that his child is found. I don't know what kind of party Kees and his family had when they got back to Amsterdam. And you may already be saying, but wait a minute, this isn't quite the right comparison. Kees and his brother, after all, did not voluntarily leave. They were forced. They were taken away from their parents. They did not squander their parents' inheritance. This son had purposefully left his family for his own pleasure. But the story is not about who deserves the parents' embrace and who does not. It is about God rejoicing at those who have returned, at those who were lost, but now are found. And if you know this chapter from Luke, you'll know that, as we heard it proclaimed this morning, we skipped over two other parables. The parable of a woman who loses a coin and goes through the entire house searching for it until it is found. And what does she do? She rejoices. And of that shepherd who's counting up the sheep and counts 99 of 100 and realizes that one is lost and leaves the 99 behind and searches until, bringing that lost sheep home upon his shoulders, invites his neighbors to rejoice. God rejoices at those innocent ones who have become lost and those who have become lost due to their own behaviors and actions. God rejoices even for those who get lost because they've been doing all the right things. Because that older brother who was standing out in the field, he was just as far away from his father as the younger son. God rejoices even at those of us who have spent so much time keeping our shoulder to the wheel, doing our duty, and being so focused on our own goodness and obedience that we have forgotten what it means to have a party, and we can't even recognize the dance music when we hear it being played. For God, the season of Lent is a season of rejoicing. We may not always think of it that way, but consider it from God's point of view. All of us, in our sometimes half-hearted ways, trying to turn, in a sense, to return home, to do whatever we can to find ourselves drawn closer to God. Now, if my friend Case had ended his story telling us about that embrace by his father on the side of the road, it would have been memorable enough. But he had a bit more to say to us that morning. The family was reunited. They returned to Amsterdam. The war ended. But 5 years later, when Kees was about 12, he found himself angrily throwing dirt onto the casket of his father, who had died suddenly and unexpectedly. After that incredible reunion, only 5 years, and then once again, loss. And Kees was convinced that God had somehow chosen to take away his father from him. And for years after that, he remained angry towards God. He was not a part of any church. He in no way had any kind of active faith, but a fair share of anger and resentment and grief. But now, in his mid-50s, standing before a new family, his brothers and sisters in this church community of which he was becoming more and more a part of, he spoke of how he had finally come to realize that on that morning, when that reunion took place, he had experienced the fullness of his father's love. In a sense, he had been given a lifetime of his father's love in that one time and one place. And Kees was able to let go of his anger. He didn't put it this way, but I believe he forgave God. And I also believe this: on that day of his testimony, God rejoiced. For Kees was lost, and now he was found. I won't ask for an altar call. I won't ask for a spoken response. But perhaps you might just want to join in if you know the words. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see. Amen.